Janae Angola Jr., the podcast.
Could keep it simple. It probably would be the smart thing to do around here. But why when the chaos is so damn fun? Today is no exception. It's Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Janae Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the show. Penn's Oil Performance Line. It's too damn Friday out here, Janae.
Yes.
I've been up for probably way too long already. I barely went to sleep last night after Evermore by Taylor Swift came out. And then I wake up this morning and I found out, among other things that we had go on last night, where we're now getting real, contemplative.
Contemplative.
That's the one. Stanford Education in the building. About the future of Cam Newton and what he looks like in the NFL coming off of a tough Thursday. And no question, it was a beatdown on Thursday Night Football at the hands of the Rams. But, Janae, social media watching athletes has become one of my favorite pastimes as millennial broadcasters. I feel like it's the thing that we're supposed to do best. So I'm going to ask you, Kyrie Irving is back out here and back active on social media after being fined $25,000 by the NBA for not addressing the media, instead putting out that weird statement that we've already talked about on this show. So before I start reading what's coming off his Instagram page, do you have anything to say on behalf of Kyrie Irving here, who once again seems to want to have his cake and not have to eat any of what anyone else serves him at this point in time?
For those who may not know, we both were a part of the same McDonald's All-American class. I got to know him as a senior in high school, and he's someone that has been, you know, really interesting. I always make the comparison about, you know, one day you'll see him dancing and playing video games with us, and the next day you'll see him reading books like I have behind me. And he's a very spiritual person. He's just on a different wavelength. But when you put that in front of the media time and time again, you do get scenarios like this that end up playing out not in his favor. So I feel like that's the best way for me to describe all of that, right?
It is. Janae, and I've said this before about Kyrie Irving, everything you described can be true. I don't know Kyrie Irving personally. He could be a great point, but as I've said time and time again, one of my favorite quotes, we are what we pretend to be. So you've got to be very careful what you pretend to be. Now, for anyone that missed it, Kyrie Irving was fined $25,000 for, again, not meeting with the media prior to the start of the season. We've heard a bunch of other NBA players giving quotes in front of those same Zoom call microphones. And so in response to that fine, Kyrie Irving took to Instagram to quote Malcolm X and said, quote, I've had enough of someone else's propaganda. I'm for truth, no matter who tells it. I'm for justice, no matter who it's for or against. I'm a human being first and foremost, and as such, I am for whoever and whatever benefits humanity as a whole. Then he went on to say, I pray we utilize the, and I don't know why he put it in quotes, fine money for the marginalized communities in need, especially seeing where our world is presently. I am here for peace, love, and greatness. Stop distracting me and my team and appreciate the art. We move different over here. I do not talk to pawns. My attention is worth more. What?
There is a real point in there, and I will try to unpack it.
But you know what? Please, Janae, help me. Make it make sense, as we say time and time again around here, because I've read this about 10 times so far today, and I'm still quite not sure what Buddy was trying to say.
The problem here is just in the addressing of the people talking about what he has. Okay, he made a decision that he felt was best for him. He felt like, a lot of times, based on how he speaks and the way he sort of operates, going in front of a media with his 100% honest views, even though at times those have been problematic when it came to like the other stuff, the flat earth stuff, he's coming forth with himself to the media. And that has been problematic because people don't understand, I guess, him in the biggest way. On the other side of that, I and that's a problem he has created, not knowing or understanding the room doesn't understand you. And so you just have to remove, that's why he had the solution of removing himself from the room, saying, hey guys, I'm going to just put out statements, but that's against NBA protocol. And I understand why the NBA is doing this, because they don't want the precedent that stars can just say, oh, I'm just going to mail in statements. Like, it's not just Kyrie, even though we feel like Kyrie's the only one that really needs this. It's not just Kyrie. They're trying to get ahead of this problem. Remember the last time we saw with Marshawn Lynch? It's like, we're going to fine you. You have to go to media. I think the better course would have been just saying these same things over and over, and people would understand you're doing your obligation. And I think that's what the NBA has forced to hand. The good nugget here is something that we actually explore, though, in the WNBPA and the MBPA. It is true. Fine money should actually be one of those things that I feel like we can use to help certain causes. And usually you do donate those to certain charities, which is one thing that we actually love as basketball players. Yes, you curse out a ref, you get a technical, you get ejected, you incur fines. And oftentimes those fines can be donated to good causes. And that is what Kyrie is saying. That's what I was saying. Hey, there's a little bit good here. That's a fact. That should be the focus. That's exactly what we should keep doing with the fine money. I don't know if he knew that we actually do that now, but I think he sort of is pointing to that and how we need to keep that same energy, because he is a member of the MBPA. It's just that it's muffled in this massive cloud of confusion and also problems of his own creation. And he just can't help himself because he wants to come forth with his honesty and his personality. But that is misinterpreted, I guess, it's not even misinterpreted.
I was going to say, Janae, I don't know how much we can, it's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Janae Agumake. I don't know how much there is to depend, because everyone makes a choice. And 10 years into Kyrie Irving's NBA career, this is a guy who still does not seem to have a clear understanding of what and how he wants to present. So I want to play this from Richard Jefferson, our ESPN NBA analyst, former pro, because he's going to talk about the weight of Kyrie's words and his understanding there. I actually think it has more to do with the Marshawn comparison than anything else. But here was RJ earlier.
He finds himself in these positions, I think, at times, because I think Kai is a very open-minded free thinker, but he also understands that whether it's Uncle Drew, signature shoe by Nike, you know, playing in multiple NBA finals, like when you are in that spot, it does put you in a position where people hold on to your words. Your words have weight. You know, Uncle Drew was like the most watched thing on YouTube. It's like, dude, like he's a superstar. And sometimes, you know, when you're a superstar, you know, your words can get twisted. They can get manipulated. But you also have to understand that your words have a ton of weight.
Chiney, I'd say this. I think trust is gained in drops and lost in buckets, right? And I think Kyrie lost a lot of trust through that whole flat earth saga. I think a lot of that stain still follows the way that people color this. But then there was what happened in Boston from a leadership standpoint. That team not necessarily vibing with the way he did things. But ultimately, I think it comes down to the comparison that you made. Marshawn Lynch knows exactly who and what he's about. Marshawn Lynch walks into those, and he doesn't give a bleep what anyone thinks in those situations. And so when they tell him, yeah, you got to show up, he says, I'm here so I won't get fined. And he goes and he plays the part so well, so consistently, and so much so that we accept it. Kyrie Irving is constantly all over the place with these things. He's a guy that wants to be a free thinker, wants to express those things, but then also wants to play games with the media, wants to do all of this stuff. Sometimes wants to act like he doesn't care what people are thinking, but then clearly in instances like this, does enough to continue to address this in a way that's abnormal. So you either have to be the guy that doesn't care or recognize that you do care and act accordingly, because when you try and live in the middle of both worlds, you get Kyrie Irving.
And I think my point here is just that he is that free thinker. He is that open mind. And when he is being himself in front of the media, it creates these problems. And that's why he tried to remove this problem by saying, I'm just going to put statements out there. And now the NBA is coming forward and saying, look, that's a bad precedent to have moving forward. Again, this is what we need to continue incurring these fines on these players that choose to go against their obligations. And I think Kyrie might end up doing, like you said, like the company line. I'm just here so I don't get fined. But I don't think that feels good to him. And that's what he sort of struggles with. But you're right. Like, as adults going into year 10, these are things that you learn through trial and error, and he's had a lot of error, but I do think he will find something that will make this not a problem for the Nets moving forward. But it's funny, because when we think about the Brooklyn Nets, guys that feel, I mean, you've got KD out there, and sometimes those feelings are what creates those chips on the shoulders and allows them to compete. So it's really messy with how they get their motivation. But overall, I hope people understand in their hearts and minds that this man genuinely is a good dude. It just is that sometimes he puts himself in situations that he 100% can avoid. And I think now the NBA is forcing his hand so that this issue doesn't happen in the future.
Which, again, a rule that you said he's a member of the NBAPA?
Yes, I think he's vice president.
With a rule that he 100% knows then. So saying, go ahead and find me, and then acting shocked or surprised when they go ahead and find you, That ain't it. Chinay and Golic Jr. reminding you to be a part of Chinay and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. The college football season is heating up, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you. Treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Now, coming up next, we will get to an important conversation that we have got to have on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed at ESPN Radio, because I'm sure a bunch of people are mad online in the name of song. We will get to that because it's the holidays. But coming up next, we all saw what happened last night. We all saw how Cam Newton looked last night. Why is Bill Belichick not willing to do what we just saw happen in Philadelphia? We'll get to that next. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN Plus.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Was that Mike Reese that Bill Belichick is just going at in the presser there? Mike Reese just out here asking the question that we all know is coming after the Patriots get manhandled on Thursday Night Football by the Los Angeles Rams. What to do about Cam in New England? It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Agwumike, and we'll get to that in just a second. But we got a thing going on here today. And
yes.
This happened. The holidays and Twitter always end up being a very volatile concoction, Chinay. And so remember around Thanksgiving, we were asking people the question about the best Thanksgiving desserts. And that was when the whole thing around sweet potato pie and pumpkin pie started becoming up and coming up a thing. So we're going to try and do this again. And we need everyone to be civil about this. Don't be civil. At ESPN Radio on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, the holiday season is upon us. We need help. This is Chinay and Golic Jr.'s weekend preview. What is the best Christmas song? Because, Chinay, this is interesting to me because Christmas tends to be an old man's game, right? Like, a lot of these songs have not changed in a very long time.
There's some tweaks out there on some Christmas songs. I still think my favorite song is a tweak.
What is it? So what's your favorite song then? What's a tweak that you're calling here?
For those who are listening on ESPN Radio, you heard Donny Hathaway's This Christmas, right? One of my favorite Christmas songs is the Chris Brown version of This Christmas. So that's a tweak.
Hell no.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you know what, Chinay? Listen, I agree. That's a tweak. And that's what tends to happen is we tend to have celebrities, current artists redo old familiar songs. Like, it's a tough business to break into new Christmas songs. So I think that's why I appreciate so much, like, Sing to the Mountaintops, the Sia Christmas album, Every Day is Christmas. If you have not gone and checked it out yet, do it. Casey Musgrave's Christmas special that was wrapped around a holiday TV show.
We have to shut it down, though. What? The best song ever, though, and you can fight me on this, is the Queen of Christmas, Mariah Carey.
Yeah,
I Want for Christmas.
Chinay, we were going through and having this conversation yesterday, and this is the only consensus must-have on this list that we could come up with. So, see if anyone could dethrone the Queen at ESPN Radio on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. The best Christmas song, objectively. There's obviously room for a write-in on the ballot here, so go and check that out. Let us know what you're feeling about
that. Like sweet potato pie was.
The sweet potato pie thing.
Devin consulted us this time. Shout out to Devin.
Yeah, we're not going to throw Devin under the bus this time. Devin, you had help on this one. So
I learned my lesson. I got absolutely flamed not putting sweet potato pie in. So I was like, all right, you guys are in on this with me. I'm not going to be the only one getting, shot down on Twitter.
There we go. So don't just at Devin now. It's not his fault. We're all in this together. Word to High School
Another
Musical.
Another good song.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Now, Chinay, as is often happening, Bill Belichick was asked the uncomfortable question in his press conference about what is going to happen with Cam Newton. It was another struggle of an outing last night for all of the Patriot offense. But we know Cam Newton last week, we saw this courtesy of Warren Sharp, became the only quarterback in the NFL to throw for under 100 yards in back-to-back wins since Brady Quinn had done it in 2009. So questions about Cam's future were going to come up, and here is the way Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, answered that question.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about just the quarterback. You're going to stick with Cam next week at quarterback.
Yeah, great question, Mike. I'm really glad you asked that. Cam's our quarterback.
Very terse, very usual Belichickian response, Janae. So we'll give Mike Reese a chance to expound on this a little further. He was on Greeny earlier today and was asked about what the future looks like. Could we see Jared Stidham more coming up the rest of this season?
Greeny, he was asked again, Belichick, this morning in his follow-up news conference, if after reviewing the tape, if he might, change his mind. And he said, I've answered that question for the last time. So it made me wonder, Greeny, if he's going to go to Jarrett Stidham at all, if it's going to be just Cam the rest of the year, even when they are officially eliminated from the playoffs. And, you know, I don't even know where to go with that, like if that means that they already have the information they need from Jarrett Stidham, or if he sort of feels a loyalty to Cam for coming in here late and doing everything they've asked for. But I wouldn't be shocked if it's Cam all the way through.
Chiney, I'm not really sure if loyalty comes into play here or anything else other than the fact that what Mike Reese said there. I think they know what they have behind them. I think we were sold a false bill of goods this offseason, and I think they know in their heart of hearts that it doesn't get better. There is a drop-off when you're putting Jarrett Stidham there, and it might be just that simple.
Yeah, exactly, and maybe their best chances to win are to still have Cam Newton run the ball, and that's his strength, and lean into that instead of trying to make him what he was in the past. And I just am a little bit more curious, you know, spinning this forward, what does this mean? Because we knew going into the season, Cam was betting on himself. He had a hugely incentive-laden deal, and now I see the Patriots, they have a ton of cap space, $62 million, and I think they're just behind the Jaguars, Jets, and Colts. In most cap space moving forward, I guess like what we've seen from Cam, a lot of people might say this clearly is not the guy for our future, but at least for now to stay competitive, I think Bill Belichick understands that. But what do you think the odds are moving forward if Stidham as well is not your answer?
I think you're going to have to look long and hard at the draft, Chiney, and this becomes the interesting question, not only for the Patriots, but for Cam Newton. I heard the discussion all day today that he's too young to be someone that we consider washed at this point, that we see quarterbacks get opportunities all the time. So I think there's still going to be a market for Cam Newton. We saw this offseason at Slim, and I'm not sure if anything we've seen so far this year has helped that. But on the Patriot front, what do they do with this Cam Newton information that they've been gathering this season with Jarrett Stidham and with the position they're going to be in now as a 500 football team? Not good enough, not bad enough to be in the spot that they want going forward. We'll ask one of our ESPN NFL insiders who knows a lot about the inner workings of the New England Patriots, and we'll do that next after this word from AT&T.
There are a lot of reasons to like AT&T 5G, to love AT&T 5G. For example, maybe you're the man of the hour, Kyrie Irving, but on the fast break. Then you'll like AT&T 5G because you're fast. Maybe you're Coach Popovich with a clipboard during a timeout. Then you'll love AT&T 5G because you're secure. Or maybe you're wide open from the top of the key and your name is Steph Curry, Chef Curry. Then you'll like AT&T 5G because you're reliable. Switch to AT&T 5G. It's fast, secure, and reliable, and now it's nationwide. AT&T 5G, it is not complicated. 5G requires a compatible plan. 5G may not be in your area. See AT&T.com/5G for you for 5G coverage details. Final workday before most of the Week 14 action on deck in the NFL. We will get our NFL experts' take on all of that and then some next on Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN+.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Taylor did it, man.
Oh, my gosh.
She went ahead and did it last night. Now, a lot of things have come out of Taylor Swift's album, Evermore, second album of the year right now, and a lot of people in the streets talking right now, Chiney, based on some like strange intel. We might not be out of the woods yet, pun fully intended. There are people that think there might be a third album in the Taylor Swift trilogy that we're starting to build out right now. Folklore, obviously, put us all on notice this summer. Evermore this fall. There are people that think there's a springtime component to this, Chiney, so get ready.
She should have done what Chris Brown did like a couple years ago where he like had an album that had about 35, 40, 50 songs, which was kind of funny.
You can't, albums are also, you can't go too long anymore. Like, we all got short attention spans now, like... You got to be like Lil Nas X and make like a minute and 24 long song. Cliff, you and I were talking about this the other day.
Remember when Pusha T dropped, I forget what it was called, the album was called, but it was only like 7 songs and it was like 35 minutes and won like multiple album of the years and all that. Just give me that.
That's it. That's all you want?
I can't do like the Drake hour and a half thing. Like, it's too much time. Like, I'm not trying to cry. Like, I just want to hear the music and be in and out. That's it. Give me your 7 best and that's it.
And speaking of our songs, on our weekend preview, we're asking everyone on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed at Chiney and Michael Jr. what your favorite Christmas song is. And I got a Grinch answer and someone said none of them. The Grinch is out there tweeting.
Yeah, listen, like the haters and the doubters, like we just got to leave them alone, Chiney. It's the internet. They're always going to be there. And
they
are
wrong. We did get Marcus Spears who said Silent Night by the Temptations.
Oh, that's a good pick. Like, I feel like anything by the Temptations automatically would be a good one. Oh. But Silent Night is one of the best songs. If you're talking about, because you said People redo these all the time. People cover them all the time. Silent Night, Great Bones on a song.
You know who had a Silent Night last night?
Oh, no. Please don't.
Cliff approved the Patriots, the performance? No? No. Let's
look at the rhythms. There's no chance I was going to let you get by with that one.
We can't let that slide. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. It sounds like Chanae is just dropping things left and right now.
What's wrong? I felt like that was a good one.
It was something, Chanae. I don't know if it was good or bad, but it was something. And we can say that about the Patriots' performance last night as well. But I think the other side of that coin is interesting to consider, Chanae. Firmly established now, the Rams are a Super Bowl contending team. Like, it feels like the obvious thing to say at this point, but we saw them go out there, and the Rams at their best in 2018 when they ended up going on and competing in the Super Bowl against the Patriots were a team that controlled both lines of scrimmage, were a team on offense that had continuity in front of Jared Goff and allowed him to go out there and drive drive this thing in a system that was going to be friendly with him. We saw all that on display last night. The difference on the other side is, Chanae, I think this version of the Rams defense is even more adept at going out there and dominating on the defensive front for being able to do the most dangerous thing when you're looking at cutting off the head of the snake when it comes to Kansas City. We have seen the teams that are able to give them issues, like the Raiders, playing them in close games twice because you can rush four, drop seven or eight at times, and get after them still with that. And Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, and that front four have started to absolutely raise hell in a lot of ways this year.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because you're reading my mind, because the way we grade any team right now is, can they compete with the Chiefs? Can they take down the Chiefs? And we've sort of found this nice little formula where you need to have enough firepower on offense, you need to be able to have a strong enough defense to slow them down, and you need to be able to control the ball and game plan the ball and have ball management. And what you saw from the Rams yesterday was everything that you'd hope in a contender against the Chiefs. They look solid everywhere offensively. It's always nice when you've got a rookie back that can go out there and give you numbers. Cam Akers set a season high for first year backs with 171 yards, and I think that's the most that that the Patriots ever gave to like a rookie ball carrier. So it was a great performance by him. As long as Jared Goff is not making mistakes, and as long as that defense shows up in the building, they have all the recipes, all the ingredients for success for a contender. And that's why I think we all sort of say, if you get production like that consistently, absolutely Super Bowl should be on their map.
Now, the interesting part here is what it takes to get over that hump, because people look at Jared Goff now, and when you see a result like that in the Super Bowl, people are going to have a lot of questions. And Marcus Spears, our very own ESPN NFL analyst and former NFL defensive lineman, was on ESPN radio earlier and talked about what it's going to take from Goff for this thing to get over the hump.
It's all about Jared Goff, because we know, like we saw in the Super Bowl when they lost it, at some point he's going, you know, I said the same thing about Baker Mayfield. At some point, these guys will be called upon to win a game when all of the things are not clicking, right? And I know that sounds like a lazy, generic take, but that's the reality. Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, you know, you've been watching this game long enough, and I know, and anybody that's been around, at some point, that quarterback position is going to have to come to the forefront.
Chanae, I think that's the interesting part of this year's NFC in particular is, will that get put into question basically by anyone until they run into the New Orleans Saints? You could argue that's the one defense that has the ability to stress them, because even, again, if we grade by the Kansas City Chiefs curve on this one, the one thing we've seen is that Kansas City Chiefs defense, you go back a couple years, they couldn't stop anything, and that's ultimately what undermined that Chiefs push late in that year, allowed the Patriots to represent in that Super Bowl. But now the Chiefs defense, one of the most opportunistic, they force turnovers, they give the ball back to their offense, but they're the definition of bend, don't break. They're going to give you yards in the middle of the field. The Rams are uniquely adept at taking advantage of that. I know modern analytics kind of shies away from the run game, but if a defense is going to allow you to do it in certain key situations, the Rams and Sean McVay, like they did last night, have demonstrated an ability to use that as an asset in their arsenal, use it in a timely way, do all the modern things that make running the football effective with them. And so I feel like matchup-wise, they're unique when it comes to the Chiefs, just because they do so many of the same things in their organization already organically that have given the Chiefs trouble on both sides of the ball in the past.
But what gives us the most qualms, and I think that's what Marcus Spears was sort of alluding to, it's the quarterbacks. Because it's funny, when you look at the NFC in the big picture here, by record at the top, you've got the Saints, and you sort of trust in Drew Brees based on what he's been able to produce over the years. You've got Aaron Rodgers, who's leading one of the top offenses. You've got the Seattle Seahawks with Russ, even though obviously numbers have gone down, we still trust that he will cook if it's a good day. And then rounding out the top five in the NFC, you've got Tom Brady, who, albeit on a new team, but still is Tom Brady, and you don't count him out in the playoffs. So in the middle of that mix, you've got Jared Goff, and I feel like that's why yesterday we sort of had the expectation that there has to be so much pressure on him. And I think that's what makes us have qualms moving into the postseason, because we're like, hey, like, if everything connects, you still have a quarterback that we still have questions from.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately, you know, when we boil this down to its most basic form, we get caught in that all the time, is looking and saying, all right, what do we believe your quarterback is capable of? And that's a question I think that's going to hold true for a lot of this weekend. We get to kind of take the temperature of a few units, but definitely a few teams that are on the cusp of going one way or another down the stretch of this NFL season. So coming up next, we'll get into how much a spark is worth at the quarterback position. We saw it last week in a team like Philadelphia, but can that do anything for you going forward? And let's talk handshake politics after a game. Why I feel like people talk out of both sides of their mouths way too often with this stuff. We'll do that next. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
His future is still full of a lot of money. And that's the thing we need to keep at the forefront of all of this in these uncertain times. Chinay Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinay Igwumike. I know all of us are looking forward to trying to figure out what Jalen Hurts can realistically do this weekend, and should the results matter when it comes to the decision the Eagles make down the stretch of this season. But, Chinay, I do have to ask you this question. Last night, there was Thursday Night Football in the NFL. We talked about the Rams and the Patriots that went on. But we also had Thursday Night Football in college. Pitt was playing Georgia Tech last night. Did you see the handshake exchange after that game? Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech's head football coach, had what looked like an uncomfortable meeting with Pitt's head coach, Pat Narduzzi, at midfield. Jeff Collins pulled away from that handshake pretty quick. It looked pretty frosty out there, Chinay. Where are you at on this? Because I'm always fascinated, Chinay, with what people want out of the post-game exchange, because they hate it when athletes are out there after a loss looking happy, smiling, seeing and talking to their friends, showing respect to the people they played. But they also get mad when Tom Brady storms off the field or Jeff Collins does what happened here in this game. So where are you on handshake politics?
There's a differentiating factor between who is doing the handshake. So and maybe this is our complete player bias, but I'm just going to lean into it. When it comes to coaches, I think there's an obligation to handshake, because there's not really like this idea that you shouldn't out there. When it comes to players, I think that based on, I mean, obviously the coaches deal with the same emotions, but when it comes to players, we've stopped doing that at the professional ranks. And the ones that actually do shakes or the jersey exchanges are the ones that actually want to. It's not an obligation anymore. Like, we stopped, what is it, like 10 years old when you're in those like little rec leagues doing like those high five lines, that type of stuff. That should not, we've actually talked about this as a WNBPA. Like, that should not be mandatory anymore. So when I saw that video, I was like, oh, that's awkward. I feel like coaches, they need to actually do the handshake, but they can leave quickly after. Don't do the whole take my pinky and let's go, because that just is a little disingenuous. Bam. No eye contact if you're watching on ESPN Plus. I saw that and I was laughing, and I understand why everyone's mad. When it happens to the coaches, I feel like it's a different standard, because that just is practice. When it happens to the players, I feel like players don't even need to be handshaking at all. And if they want to, it should be people they actually want to see.
I see. I feel like it should be that way for the coaches. Like, everyone's out there in a game of high stakes, violent chess, playing football, playing sports. Like, it's all, like, we talk about this all the time at post game press conferences, but people managing to compose themselves for those situations. Like, you just, like, you might not like that guy to begin with that's across the field from you. Then you just spent 4 hours going at each other's necks. And so I feel like you said, if that's a person you like and you want to go show some love to, go ahead. But I think we project all these sportsmanship ideals in places they don't need to be sometimes. And I feel like people are wild inconsistent with all
I'm
that.
I'm cool
too.
If the coaches actually articulate it. Usually coaches are always like, show sportsmanship. And so that's exactly why they go and do what they have to do. But now we're past that. You know, athletes don't do that anymore. You only do jersey exchanges and all that with the people you want to. So I feel like coaches can adopt that standard as well. That was a funny video, though. It's like, no eye contact. That's what I do to my siblings when I'm mad.
Oh, it's, I could say it is. It's salt 101 on display right there. Minimal effort, zero eye contact. I keep it moving in this situation here. Chinne Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr., Chinne Agwumike. So much talk about what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. Heard this from Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of KJ&Z, Keyshawn J. Will and Zubin, here in the mornings on ESPN Radio. Thoughts on what this situation looks like going forward now that the Eagles have made the decision to start Jalen Hurts this weekend?
This is not a Jalen Hurts issue. This was a Carson Wentz issue. So for Carson Wentz not to be there for a young quarterback, that would be wrong. He's going to be there for him and help him out for whatever it is. You know, he's not going to just turn his back on him and act. No, he's not going to pout and do those things. Carson's issues will be with the coaching staff in the organization. It won't be with his teammate. What the hell has Jalen Hurts done to him? Right? I mean, think about it.
And Chinne, I think from what we've seen from Carson Wentz so far in his career, no one would expect for him to turn a cold shoulder to Jalen Hurts going out making his first start against this caliber of defense.
Yeah, and I think we heard straight from his teammates that actually had his back, and also his friends and Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox that were basically defending their actions in the sense that we're going to show love to a guy that probably needs love right now. And I feel like this greater expectation of, you know, Jalen Hurts in this situation, that's really tough for him. Imagine, you know, as a young player stepping into a place that has already been that everyone's eyes and intentions are trying to see if this person can save your season. That's a tough place to be. And you know what this sort of gives me shades of? What we were dealing with, you know, circa expectation when it came to Tua and the Dolphins. And that's the crazy thing, because these two guys, Tua and Jalen, are sort of tied based on understanding that he had to take a backseat to let Tua shine. And so when I started like to really unpack a lot of the feelings and emotions it would take for Jalen Hurts to succeed, I feel like those expectations need to be tempered, especially given that they're going up against the Saints. But this guy sort of knows what it feels like to fight for himself and for his career. So I feel like a lot of people hopefully will be rooting for him to succeed, even though that does make things more competitive. But that's always a better outcome long-term for the Eagles.
That is the weird part about this, Chinne, is Jalen Hurts can legitimately look at Carson Wentz and say, I know exactly what you're going through. Hell, you could argue Jalen Hurts has gone through this exact situation at a far more fevered pitch than Carson Wentz ever will. I mean, put down benched at halftime in the middle of the national championship after you had led your team up there to that season. So Jalen Hurts knows about the resolve it takes in this moment. He knows both sides of this coin. And so I think he's got the maturity to handle this situation. The Tua comparison's interesting, though, Chinne, because with the Eagles, they've got money, which is different. They know Carson Wentz financially is their quarterback, but Miami did that with playoff hopes still on the line. Philadelphia feels a little more down and out in this situation now. And so maybe you could say, as a veteran player in our locker room, Chinne, you know this, going out there, self-preservation is still so much of a motivator. And for a bad team like Philadelphia, the rest of that team has their collective jobs to worry about in most of these instances, that they can't be fretting about who's under center or trying to adjust based on that.
And that's why I think that comparison is really interesting, because for Tua, what did he have this season when he stepped into Ryan Fitzpatrick's role? He had a great special teams. He had an emerging defense. And so he had a nice safety net. Jalen Hurts doesn't really have any of that. And so as there's so much pressure and all the eyes were all talking about finally getting able to watch him play, we need to reset our expectations, because what he's stepping into, first and foremost, it has to be commended, because this is a difficult position to be in, but hopefully he's built for that position based on his experience before.
And people always talk about accountability, and I think there's one way it actually ends up coming out in these situations, because when you see people fired, when you see people benched, all it does is remind everyone else on that team that, man, if they're going to go after that guy, like this was always the case for years with Tom Brady, where it was, all right, if Bill's going to dog cuss him in a meeting, what's he going to do to the 53rd guy on the roster? If they're going to bench the guy that they just gave $100 million to, imagine what's in store for me if I don't get right. And we kind of saw that play out in a weird way with Tua in Miami. Now, stakes are totally different down there, but whether it was by efficiency, by DVOA, the defense and the special teams actually started playing better. The offense, you know, suffered the growing pains of a young quarterback, but they tightened the screw in the rest of that group. And so I'm sure there will be renewed energy on the part of Fletcher Cox and that defense to go out there and say, we got to account for what's going to happen with a rookie quarterback in this situation.
You think more people are rooting for Jalen Hurts this time? I think so.
I think people are... I think everyone's rooting. Jalen Hurts is an easy guy to root for. Yes, I think people are absolutely rooting for Jalen Hurts, and for good reason. The way he carries himself, unbelievable. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show. Pennzoil Performance Line. Coming up next, though, it's been a very different year in college football. This weekend's a little more crowded, but it's still about one game. That's next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.